Let's go.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Bingetown TV. We are finally here to talk about the Midnight Club episode nine and 10, the finale. We finally got to finish. We've been going two episodes at a time for the pod, and now we know just as much as you know. So let's talk about it. I'm very excited. We've kept the conversations to a minimum. I'll say the number one thing, I did not know that Flanagan wrote this to have a second season. So when I finished the finale, which I was the first of this crew to finish, I was on a tear on my phone being like, what is happening? Why wasn't this explained? Like certain things, like why didn't they go deeper into this? And then that saved it because I'm glad I told these guys because none of us knew that he wrote it for season two. None of the other ones were written to get a season two. So we were shocked by that. But it does change the lens in which you watch these episodes. So I want to hear just like from each of you real quick, how you feeling, like hot, cold, what do you got?
Insane mix of emotions, because thank God you said that. Otherwise, I would have been furious because there's like 6 minutes left. And I'm like, all right, we have at least 25 like loose ends to wrap up. So in the other side of it, it's really cool. If there's so much more of the story, I'm glad he didn't skip over anything. And if it needs to go through seasons to give us like the full effect, then, you know, it sucks that we have to wait, but it's going to be good in the end. So I'm in the end really, really excited about it because there's so much more to tell.
I'll go next. Again, thank you, Kathleen, for letting us know, because I would have been smashing the TV. If I watched it on my tablet, but I would have been smashing something if, you know, I saw that this ending was the ending without knowing there was a season two. I did see before you texted us that people were saying that it was supposed to have a season two, but it wasn't an official source. So I just threw it out the window because Flanagan never does that. So I just assumed it was bullshit. But again, thank you, because that was much needed to know. That lens is definitely very important for this final episode. Loved episode 9, episode 10, even with a season 2 coming. I might have some hot takes about my enjoyment of it, but you know, the fact that there is a season 2, I'm very ready for it. You know, I enjoy Midnight Club and I am ready for season 2, hopefully, if it gets greenlit.
To be fair, Jimmy, you were on your honeymoon for most of the screener time, and we couldn't do this without you. So
yeah, that's true. Thank you, guys.
Slasher Sib.
Thank you,
Luke.
So I'll jump in and just say that this was a crazy good first season, but I just hate that Flanagan switched it up on us like this because we've never seen a cliffhanger episode from Flanagan, and to be honest, it's probably the weakest episode of the season.
Yep.
Outside, I will say, of some of the emotional beats that, of course, hit. Because the whole purpose of this season and the highlights of it for me were the characters. I really like these characters more than probably any Flanagan show. So that stuff all worked for me. And even the ending of Dusty's story, I fucked with. We'll talk about that too. But everything else, I was left super unsatisfied. Okay, it was cool that Stanton's part of the Paragon and whatever, but and we'll talk about all that stuff. But it just, and the Julia thing, I think you called that in episode two. Yeah. Like that, that was so in your face, like obvious that we wanted it to not be that.
Yeah.
So it just felt like we got no good twist this season. And that's fine if everything's prepped and we do get a second season. So we'll talk about this because I loved episode 9 so much. I really enjoyed it.
The biggest twist is that Stanton is Athena. Athena. That's the biggest twist. And
which me and you said at the end of last episode.
Are you saying that's confirmed or you're assuming? 100%.
I mean, they both, if you recall when Regina got caught and she didn't have any hair at all, I'm assuming that they both have like alopecia or something and it runs in the family. You know what I mean? Like that's a hint. They both have
Athena's
it on their neck.
Athena's the daughter though, right?
Yeah. They both have it on their neck versus everyone else has it on their wrist. You see it while she's writing the journal, Athena, on the neck.
But it seems like Stan's too old to be Athena compared to...
Well, that's the point. Like, Regina's supposed to be, like, this, like, fountain of youth type thing. I agree that it doesn't seem like Stanton could be Regina's daughter. But if any of the Paragon shit is true, which me and Luke were discussing in the last episode, just kind of... If there was some like sort of fountain of youth and they did the Paragon stuff and they were able to get some sort of like immortality youth thing, then I buy that. But I agree that Stan's a little old, but yeah,
I feel like it would be the opposite,
right? Because she's is it like Athena is the daughter, right, of Regina, correct?
Right, right.
So, you know, it checks out too, because she was the one that saves all the kids, like getting them out of that house in the first place. Now she goes back and saves a bunch more kids. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I'm totally, it lines up. I'm down with it.
Okay, we're definitely going to have to get into this later because I need to talk then. I don't know. This is definitely not, I mean, up my just alley to
add
at all.
On, yeah, I mean, just to add on to it, her being Athena, like it makes sense when she's, when she got the journal, she burned it. She said it brought up like old memories because it was her that wrote it. And then when she was like on the phone talking about the Paragon, that was what that was all about.
Yeah.
I'm pretty confident that it was Athena.
So
when you're saying too old though, because I think you're referring to Regina looked younger, but that was also 20, 30 years in the past. Then you time jump.
You're so right. I'm dumb. The
timeline works. Like she's way
you're
older.
Right. You're right. You're right. You're right.
She was the younger.
Are we podcasters?
Are we podcasters or what? Well, am I a podcaster?
No, you.
Or what? So wait. All right. So
yeah.
Should we talk about an hour later? So I actually read this whole thing wrong. Like I took it as the reveal was that she's bad and part of the Paragon.
Okay, let's save it then, because let's just run through and get to it then. Because right. I thought we were all going to be in consensus. I guess
we,
it's because me
are.
And Kathleen kind of came to consensus at the end of 7-8 that we thought she was Athena.
I don't usually feel this dumb on a pod. Man.
We were basically split on the Julia thing, though.
Before we jump in, me and Luke kind of settled on this thing where Athena would obviously be like, fuck you, mom, kind of deal. Mm-hmm. Get out of there. To spite her, go to real medicine, like become a real doctor.
Yeah.
And then bought the house in order to keep everyone else out of it from doing all that crazy shit. Like the Paragon.
I should listen to our own podcast.
That's what we kind of came to a consensus of last, but we'll dig into it further. Yeah. So episode 9 is called The Eternal Enemy, based on the story that Spence tells. And I want to say, Luke, last episode we said Sherry's the only one who hasn't told a story yet, right? And Spence mm-hmm. actually hadn't either. We missed him completely. And I'm glad he told one because it was great. But we kind of open with, we find out that Sandra is the one that's being cured. And mm-hmm. I like
shocked.
That. I was shocked. I thought I was going to be Alanka. I mean, that's the obvious choice. But it being Sandra. And another thing, boys, that we talked about last episode was that I said timeline wise, it has to be a few weeks later because like post the ritual, they would have had to get scans and someone look at it and stuff. But no, the scans are from prior
before, right.
to the ritual, which, meaning perfect. That it had nothing to do with anything.
Yes, I love that that was clarified. Mm-hmm. I mean, it just makes so much more sense. And I just love the placebo aspect from Alanka. She's like, I feel it. I think it's me. I feel it. And I'm going to go home. I'm sorry, Sandra. You know, and I was like, dude, you guys, Alanka, is this a hot take? Like I was watching episode 9 and I was like, Alanka main character, but without a doubt, my least favorite character in the show. Like I like Sheree more than I like Alanka. It's so weird.
In episode 9 or just generally in the show?
Generally all over in the show, like for being
that's kind of hot, I think,
of a show.
Yeah, I think that's pretty hot.
For episode
actually.
9, I too had big secondhand embarrassment when she's like, it's me, no Sandra, sweetie. Yeah.
And the whole throwdown like, too with
no. Yeah, with Mark's girlfriend too. And I was like, she just had a bunch of sketch moments, and like I know she just thought she was gonna live, and then that world came crashing down. But I was like, Alanka girl, you're making it hard for me to root for you.
This is actually like, now I feel like there's a lot more than I thought to talk about, just because I want to dive into that part too about the cure and everything, but continue.
Okay. So really quickly, we end the episode with Kevin being the old woman in the basement. So Alanka brings him up. He has this dream about the old man. They wake up, he wakes up in a tizzy. Alanka was taking care of him. Basically, he is now absolutely crowned gaslighter of the century, as I said in episode 2 or something like that. I don't really like Kevin by the end either. That may be my hot take. I mean,
it's pretty hot.
He's fine. But like, I like the other ones better. This quote unquote side characters, I think they're like funnier and cooler. Alanka and Kevin are the ones that are like broodier. And I mean, I guess that happens when your character's more fleshed out, right?
I mean, Kevin just makes it so hard. At the end, like, he's such a good character. I still like him. But the fact that Alanka's like sharing all this deep information because she probably feels very vulnerable because she thinks she's crazy. And Kev's like, nah, no idea what you're talking about. It's like, if you knew this whole time, why would you at least make her feel not crazy?
Agreed.
Yeah, agreed. Especially because he even did the whole, yeah, I'm seeing like the different walls and the time travel kind of stuff. And like, and that's total gaslight because she brought that up straight up. And he's like, nah.
I'm kind of annoyed with myself that I didn't kind of put that together, that he would see the old man. I know it's very hard, but like, I was waiting for him in episode one. We got that flash of him with his overalls real quick. And then we like almost never see him again.
Mm-hmm.
But we do get, you know, the pictures of Kev, you know, on the bench with there. And it's just like, it was alluding to it the whole time. And the fact that, I mean, Flanagan just wrote it so well that it's kind of in front of your face. And when you see it, you're like, oh, fuck, how did I not notice? So it's really, really cool.
Why did he show they didn't even need to have that singular interaction? Because to me, that just defeats the, like, you can't guess that because we did see the guy through Alanka. It's like, what, we see him sometimes, but not a lot. That's the part where I didn't like, that wasn't a guessable thing for us, I don't think.
Yeah, it's confusing, but because you
saw him first.
Yeah.
The guy?
Yeah.
Yeah, the old guy.
Yeah, it should have been all or nothing.
Well, the only reason I'm saying that is because when Alanka would have these visions and nightmares, she would see the old lady most of the time. She saw that old guy once or twice, but then she would also see Kev. Like, you wouldn't see his face, but like, it would elude, she would snap out of it and Kev would be there. So she was the only one involved in the visions. Like, you wouldn't see Anya in any of these when she was having her episodes. So, I mean, it was kind of there. But I agree, it would have been super hard to guess. But as soon as it's revealed, it's like,
well, Flanagan also does a really good job at making you think that Kevbot just really is likes her and he's kind of stalking her for the first couple where she's like wandering off and then she snaps out and he's like, whoa, you're all right. It seems like he's just following her because he likes her. And they even allude to that between their own conversations. So it's there, like you're saying, Paul, 100%. But he does kind of do the red herring pretty well with trying to fake you out. But I was wondering if it was going to be one of those things where she's the woman and he's the man. You know what I mean? Like, she's acting out the woman and he's acting out the man, but that's not even close to being right, because, you know, he sees the guy and she sees the girl. And when she pulls the girl around, it's Kevbot. So it's just, that's just not going to be a thing at all. It's just, they see the old woman more as the girl and Kevin sees the guy more.
Well, the whole thing, wrench it, flag on the play, is that she saw him in the mirror at the party when she fainted. Like, that brings it so early. It's like, what is going on? She's not even in the halls of Brightcliff. They must have been calling to her. I mean, without knowing that we were getting a season two, none of this was answered besides the little clipping on the wall. And the very last scene is supposed to be like, okay, the original owners are the man and woman.
Right,
fine.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Cool. I was, guys, can you imagine me not knowing season two and they just did nothing with that reveal by the end of eight, Kevin's the old woman, but we get nothing from it. Everyone, all the kids are like, it's a shared delusion, guys. You're nuts.
Honestly, you could, I'm not saying it would be a great show, but you could tell this story and end it here without the old man and woman stuff and just make it be a show about the kids in hospice telling their scary stories. And
I agree,
that's the end of the show. Like, this would actually have been a good first season and a good ending with them both finishing their stories. And then the show's over. Don't do the Paragon thing with Athena and just end it. I'm not saying
I wouldn't have been happy.
I'm not saying, you would have to literally rewrite the entire show. Scary ass. Yeah. I'm saying if the old man and woman storyline didn't exist, you could have a show about kids in hospice dealing with death and telling their Midnight Club stories. And the stories are the main part of the show, because if you think about it, like Kathleen said, if you didn't know there's a season two, they basically ended the season with, okay, we're finishing up their stories that they're telling. Mm-hmm. They gave us the two endings and they were good two endings. And then the end for the season.
Just to jump in, I'm sorry, I don't want to jump too far ahead, but is the next scene we get them at the table with Alanka and Kevin just explaining everything?
Right after Natsuki and Amesh, morning after.
Yeah. Love that. That's amazing.
Dab for the kids. Come on.
They're my favorite
Alanka's
couple.
Alanka's reaction was so good. She's like, okay.
So happy, smiling.
But yeah, Paul, go ahead.
So does Natsuki just like tell us what the old men and old women are. I'm like, basically. I basically took that as truth, you know, yeah. What maybe with the certain ghost, whatever she was talking about, it was a different ghost. It's not the same one. There's multiple of these, but I mean, the way she says like, I'm hungry, I want to feed. She's right over Anya right before Anya dies. I was like, all right. So like Natsuki got told a folk tale, but it's actually the twist, right? That
is, you nailed that, didn't you? You kind of had that theory yourself in like episode 5-6.
Yeah. When she was over Anya, I kind of thought that they were like feeding. I thought it was more feeding off of like their death, not feeding off of the years that they didn't have.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was, but as soon as Natsuki says that, it's like, all right, confirmed. That's the old man and woman in my head. I mean,
whatever, man. I wrote your name in my notes. Just take the compliment.
Okay? Yeah, oh, I'm fucking taking it.
I was surprised that Amesh wasn't one of the ones that said, I feel you, when they start telling their story about what they're seeing, because my take was that maybe you're seeing the old man and woman the closer you are to death, because that's how Anya explained it from her old roommate. And Amesh was telling Natsuki that he's starting to see things out of the corner of his eyes, and he's starting to, you know, he thinks he's on his way to death.
So me and Luke talked about this again last episode, the different entities of the shadow versus the man and woman. Mm-hmm. So the man and woman, I think, are literally only seen. I don't think anyone has seen the man and woman.
Well, that's, they just
see the shadow. So we were discussing kind of, are they the same entity? Or are they two separate entities? What do you guys think? We kind of landed on who knows.
Yeah, I definitely took me until right now with Amesh is saying, you know, he's losing his vision. I took that as that shadow separate entity is literally death. You know, that is Tristan was seeing it and then she died. Anya, we saw her when she was getting close. She was seeing the shadow everywhere, but never once did we see her see the old lady.
Okay, so you're saying that the shadow could be symbolism, but then the old lady and the old man are a thing.
Well, I'm not saying it's symbolism. I'm saying that's literally death coming to like.
Well, that's what I mean. Like, yeah. Yes. So like symbolism.
It's real. They're seeing it.
Only the one dying though, because we know Ilanka and Kevbot didn't see it when Anya was dying. So I guess that's fine. And then that could be two separate entities. It can't be. And I'm going to go with symbolism or actual death, doesn't matter. Like, you can't really make it two separate entities besides that and really make it some kind of story that you're really going to explain that makes sense. You know, you got to have one set of freaking ghosts and be done with it, unless, you know, death is just, you know, the shadow's death and that's what each kid is seeing as they die. That's fine.
They have the same boss. That's what I said last
time. I don't want two supernatural beings that are separate from each other trying to throw down over the...
I don't think they're fighting. I think they have two different jobs.
My issue with that...
Who's their boss then?
At the end of episode one, though, like the last thing you see is the shadow chase Ilanka. So that has zero payoff then, and it doesn't really make sense with like close to death because she lived, and you know that's the only part that doesn't really track there.
I definitely was just about to bring up the only part that doesn't line up with exactly Ilanka seeing this shadow.
Wait, when
a
was
lot
that?
In the last a lot in the beginning
of episode 1.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It was definitely a lot in the beginning. And
yeah,
I'm literally just pulling this out of my butt right now to make it make sense. Maybe like I said, like the old man, the old lady are kind of working in tandem with, you know, death, the shadow or whatever.
They have an agreement.
If she got possessed by this old lady from the get-go when she's not even there, that's another thing that I'm a little confused about. Like she saw these when she was still at like the college party in episode 1, mm-hmm. but once she did get the vision, she got the ghost. So maybe it's like, all right, you're possessed by this lady and this lady knows that she works with this hooded shadow figure. It's like, you know, the fish that go in and clean out the mouths of the bigger fish, like in the sharks and stuff like that. They're working in tandem. Death
They're
comes
working
in
tandem. The old man, the old lady want to eat the years out of
and,
the
But
the
first,
people,
death has to just, come and yank the life out of them, and then they can feast.
All right. Feast. So moving forward, just to push us forward, I'm sure we'll keep having these conversations. Paul had mentioned Tristan. So speaking of Tristan... And something that absolutely flopped in my eyes was that Sandra was the one on the intercom.
Yeah.
I want spooky. I want real ghosts, spooky Tristan, coming through and talking to us. I was so sad.
We did see Tristan's ghost though for a second. That literally when happened.
Natsuki walked by. Yeah.
Yeah, which is so confusing.
Dude,
and
I'm
so
almost
sad.
Thinking. I hope that everything was thought out. Like, I'm starting to question because we're not going to have answers, and maybe ever. Like, are these plot holes? Like, because the whole male farmer ghost in the scene in scene one is kind of blowing up everything, right? Like, it seems like that's basically making all of our theories fall apart. And then I'm just really hoping that we get a season two, because it feels like a lot of this is, it was almost impossible to guess anything besides the identity of Julia and the identity of Athena and the identity of Regina.
Unless you're me.
Unless you're Jimmy. That's what's different about this show compared to the other Flanagan shows. I feel like there wasn't anything to guess.
Here's the thing, and I think we're starting to get some kind of theme here where Flanagan came out hot with Hill House, which I'm not saying anything about any of his other shows being bad. They're all great. I love them all. That's why we cover them. But he came out hot with Hill House, and that was a spooky show.
Yeah.
And that was very, very supernatural, with ghosts in the background at every second, and everything just made sense supernatural wise. And, you know, it was all, even the time travel kind of stuff, which is very hard to do, it all made sense in a vacuum. And we had a phenomenal, spooky show. Bly came out, and we wanted spooky. And I remember covering it on the pod, and there being the specific part where we're seeing these ghosts at different parts of the house, and there's the dollhouse, and it's the, and we're seeing they're being placed in different parts of the house. And I'm going, man, this is going to be sweet, because it's going to be some kind of crazy, supernatural, spooky stuff. But then it very quickly turns obvious into the more of the love story. And again, Kathleen, dab it out. Great, great show. But we said on the pod, not really spooky anymore. Midnight Mass was obviously spooky, but it was a different kind of spooky. It's like, here's a monster. We're looking for spooky. Like you're saying, that Sandra thing fell so flat for me, because I was so pumped when we heard it out of the speaker,
and that was good
we're
stuff.
Thinking it's Tristan and this and that. And then the Sandra reveal, I was like,
yeah,
listen, on the other hand, Sandra in this scene is really sweet. She did it out of a good of her heart. She saw that everyone was kind of giving up hope, so she did it. First of all, we haven't really talked about this. Sandra being the one who's cured, right? She's going through so much. Not only is she have to tell the rest of the crew, everyone in there thinks they're dead, right? Death sentence. That's what the whole show is about, dealing with your mortality, you know? And now she has to tell them that she's living. But not only that, it's not like she's cancer free. She's just not, like, she has to go through all the tests, all the chemo, all everything all over again. So she's like devastated, and everyone was like acting weird. So I'm glad that within this scene in the library, everyone like was, it may be the next scene, but everyone's finally like good again.
Right.
That
right.
felt flat for me. But the
when
Sandra
she shows up
emotional
for Midnight
beats,
Club.
The emotional beats hit, the spooky beats flat.
Right. And that's what we've been saying about his last couple shows. And that's just the point I was trying to make.
Alanka patronizing Sandra in that scene made me want to punch her. Then I wanted to punch her again in the Kevin's girlfriend scene.
Yeah.
Dude, I fell in love with Kevin's girlfriend because she finally got some personality here, and she was so mean to her.
Kevin's
a dick to her in the next episode. We'll talk about it. It was okay. It worked out and it was nice for everybody. But the way he broke up with her was awful. And then him hooking up with Alanka right away, I hated all that. Catherine deserved better.
Yeah. Catherine is
justice for
the
Catherine.
Girl in Dusty's story, right? The actress that, okay.
Yeah. Nancy. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool.
Man, he's killing her, dude.
Yeah. So, and then we get a quick scene with Spence being like, bro. Don't even. You're obsessed with Alanka. Just break it off. Like, your life is short. Basically, which we find out with the end of his story, Kevin's whole deal is he's trying to make everyone else better, like, okay, even in his last moments. Like, he doesn't want to hurt anyone else. And it's like
he wants his memory
himself.
To be good to everybody. That's the only thing that's left of you after you die. And he wants everybody to have a happy memory of him. And that's why he won't break up with... what's her name again? Catherine?
Catherine, yeah.
Yeah. Won't break up with Catherine because she doesn't deserve to be upset and have a bad memory of him before he dies, but he's not thinking about himself. He's thinking about just her.
Yeah. moving on, really sweet Mark and Spence. Like I said, Mark is just pure good. He brings Spence to this little queer gathering so we can be around people like him. You know, he's, I mean, he's just seen himself as defected, as we see from his story, or an outcast, but being around people who aren't scared, right? Who are rallying or fighting against it. It was a good experience for Spence. Yep. Made me so sad though, because obviously, like at this point, he's going to die, right? Like he's in the home and everything, and everyone's fighting, and he's not going to be able to see the like better life that people like me live in 2022. I get to just be gay as fuck anywhere I want. And they
did anybody think that Spencer and
I'm glad
Mark
they did
kiss.
It. I'm glad they.
Oh,
did.
Me too.
So close.
So mad.
Yeah, I would have been so creepy. I would have been like, dude, you're a fucking nurse.
Yeah, I was thinking it in the way where I'm like, please don't. And I'm glad because
please, the love of God.
It's just a really great story between the two of them that they can do that, and it doesn't have to turn into some romantic storyline. It's just QB1 is just being a great person.
The goat.
Yeah.
I want to go back to me talking about episode one and two and be like, I don't know about Mark. He's a little sketchy, and just slap the shit out of myself.
Yeah. Well,
and Mark is the best character.
He's hot.
I mean, Mark, obviously at this point, great guy. There's no turn. Kev Bot was the other option, and he's not going to have a turn. So he not necessarily that we love him. Like Mark is way better than Kev Bot in my eyes, but we thought maybe one of them is going to be secretly a sketch bag. And that's not, apparently, the answer for now.
Wait, no. You know what? I wanted to bring this up at the top. Fucking the secret Kate Carla Hamish. You know what
this.
It is? It's in freaking. It's in Anya. Did you know what it is, Luke? You seem like
no,
the only
I
one.
I have
who
no
may
idea
not.
What you're talking about.
So
I was going to give you my
Kate
guesses.
Siegel, Hamish Linklater, and Carla Gugino.
Yeah.
They are in episode Anya when Anya is like. Done work, sitting on the couch, watching like an SVU type thing. They're the voices. You don't see their faces, but when you listen, it's clearly Kate. I don't think I hear Carla, but I hear Kate.
No,
and
so
Hamish.
Carla
crazy.
Is Carla's separate than them on SVU show, but there is, she is a voice too.
You're telling me Kate Siegel isn't Regina? I definitely thought
so.
Kate
okay,
was
listen,
Regina.
Listen to
no.
this.
We already
okay.
went
cool.
over that,
so,
didn't we?
Well, that was
young Regina and old Regina. I swear
so,
to God, it was like
you
Kate
know who
Omega
she is
up.
Though. Now that you've like looked at her face,
she's
good. It, she yeah, she's from the other shows. Flanagan said like you won't get them, and if you do, I'm so proud of you making it. And I again, this kind of fell flat for me because you really want to do all three of them as a voice. Tell me to look
like
for
it.
Them. Yeah, don't tell me to look for them, and then they're a voice. You know, I honestly thought they were going to be someone in the story that's like heavily made up or something. So that's why I was looking for it, and I really did think that Regina's smile was like Kate Siegel. So I was like, oh, is that her made up? And then I looked it up, and I was like, no, it's not her.
It didn't need to be Henry Thomas level, but come on, like they could. I thought one of them was going to be in the witch story, in the like in the people that are dead. While Alanka's walking with her mom, I thought I was looking.
Yeah.
I couldn't
find
it, but I don't even care about a voice acting. Yeah. Like a voice.
My friend Kevin texted me and said, he was on episode five, and he said, wow, did they have to put like Kate in all this makeup to be the doctor? And I said, the fuck are you talking about? He goes, how many hours did she spend in the makeup? I go, Kevin, that's not her. What are you talking about?
That's funny.
Like, and he was like, no, he goes, for five episodes, I've been mad that they went through these lengths to put her in this
that's
makeup.
Ridiculous.
Like,
that's
you're
wow.
crazy.
That's not even close.
I know.
Sorry, Kevin, but not even close.
Better than my guess. My guess was Kate Siegel as Regina and then Hamish and Hot Mama were the two old haunted people that haunt.
That'd be sweet. I mean, you don't see them.
They're my only other guesses.
I know it's not my time to talk about it, but let's talk about our boy Henry Thomas for 1 second. Loved him for his little cameo.
Yeah,
he's so good. Phenomenal.
We gave him his props. He was fire in that.
We interviewed him on the pod, guys. You could check that out.
Check that out. Okay, so next we have Shasta, and this is the Julia Jane reveal. Alanka goes there upset after the Catherine thing. She's like, I got to get the fuck out of here. Can I stay here? Apparently the food there is the best you'll ever have. Weird. Anyway, we get the Julia Jane reveal. Pretty anticlimactic for me. And I also think
for
that
all of us, probably
Shasta is just like, I was watching this, like her stock was dropping every second. I was like, she is such a sketch bag. And obviously this is, I texted all of you, I think. And I said, I'm so mad we didn't call this, because we said she seems desperate. She seems like she needs Ilanka. We should have called that she's sick, re-sick. We should have called that. That feels like something that Bingetown TV should have called.
I wasn't on the one episode, but the one where she was talking to Ilanka and she was like, do you have a diary? Can I see it? Can I at least read a little bit of it? I was like, you are so overstepping your line. You are so, it's so clear that you are fiending for this right now.
So, okay, here you go. Why did she want the... Okay, so the journal's Athena's. That okay, that's fine, because she wanted to... But she had it at one point.
But you may... It was 30 years ago. You forget. You know what I mean? Like, you need the... Yeah. You need to the line by line, but it's... She never actually got it again, so obviously she knew enough of it to go.
And so, to my defense, I'm just going to say that I did not think she was Julia. I was leaning the Regina side, so that's why I didn't think she was sick. So, take it out on Jimmy and Paul and yourself.
Well... The thing about the way this show went is we called Julia so quick because it just seemed so obvious.
It was too obvious. It was like, obvious red herring.
And then I think that Kathleen, you did like the stock went up to down. And I honestly think it was like a bell curve because she was sketchy as shit. And then for like a couple episodes, I was like, she seems like she's helping. And maybe they are going to like red herring us and make her like a good person. And Stan's actually going to be the evil one. Right. And then, like what Paul was saying, when she starts asking for the book, it's like, and you guys can't see me right now, but I'm doing the bell curve. And I'm like, oh, here comes the sketchiness. And she goes right back down. And then, you know, I guess she was Julia. Now, I didn't guess that she was sick again. I just guess she was trying to do what Regina did. And she's just like, I want to be immortal, pretty much.
So my one thing that I'm just super confused about Julia Jane and Shasta now when she's older, like, obviously we didn't see it because they didn't give it to us. Maybe we'll get it in season two. But why is the book back in the library? Like, if she was jerking off about this journal the whole time and she wants it, it has all the answers, why would she put it back in the library?
Well, so, who put it there is the big question.
Well, they said Julia put it there because...
Well, whose drawings was Ilanka looking at that gave her the duodecimus?
Julia's, but that was in the file that Stanton left the door unlocked after sneaky Ilanka was like, give me those files. And she was like, no, but didn't lock the door and didn't do anything with them. Like, if you don't want somebody to figure something out, get rid of the file that's going to explain it to them.
So that just doesn't make sense to me. Like, if this journal has all the answers and she wants it more than anything, why fucking put it back on the shelf? Like, they talk about, oh, we'll make up a really good story. That's jumping forward a little bit, but like, we're going to make up a story. You're going to be walking around the woods and all this, but like, I don't know why I put the journal back.
The only thing that I could think of is if she's trying to recruit more people again at some point and they could find it, but you know, it's like you're hiding it into a needle in a haystack. So again, I agree with you. I don't really understand either.
Yeah. Maybe we'll get answers in season two.
Steph.
What's up, Steph?
Hi.
No, that actually tracks because that's exactly what happened, Jimmy. That's, she did recruit Ilanka. She needed Ilanka to help her get in there. That almost works.
I agree, it works, but why
she finds it?
Why leave the original journal? Why not like leave like messages and be like other stuff? Why not recreate something to leave signs?
Right.
And leave the gold mine there.
I'm not being a dumbass here, right? There's the book that was in the library, and then there's the Midnight Club journal that was in the basement.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. And she left both.
Yeah, I mean, she may have left in a hurry. I don't know. Let's move past that only because we'll never get an answer. So we're going to be right back right after Spence's story. So I'm sure we'll talk about this some more. But so it's the Midnight Club again. Sandra gets very sweetly embraced, which I was very happy about. Everyone's happy for her, which they need to be. But now we've got Spence's story, which was great. I love a fucking futuristic bot droid. It's Spence bot. But the moral of the story basically is about not being defective, like character flaws like don't make you any less perfect. Like, you got to love yourself. You got to love everybody else type deal, which is Spence's whole storyline, right? His whole character arc, which I love. Right. So you guys want to talk about anything specific in the story?
Just one little Easter egg, and I don't think it's alluding to anything. I think it's just a shout out to Stephen King. Rel, which is Spence's character in his end story, is reading Dead Zone by Stephen King. Mm. When we got Kevin telling his story about Dusty in the beginning, he pulled out of his locker the original Stephen King, The Dark Tower series, the first book. And it's so good too, because it was, you know, in the '90s or whatever, I'm not exactly sure of the date, but it was the correct book cover because my mom loves the Dark Tower series. And like, she has all the OG books when they came out back in the day. And then that is the correct cover art. So it's just so good. And I don't think there was any hidden meaning. I think it was just a shout out to Stephen King, one horror writer, like shouting out, you know, is probably his inspiration.
How are you going to possibly bring that up before bringing up Mega Man X?
Like, right. I was going to let you guys say that, because
you know what the hitting meaning behind that is, right? It's just Flanagan being like, it's the best game of all time.
I hope so.
The cyborg thing works perfectly with it. It's awesome. And the intro.
What level was the intro?
It was the intro level, and intro, the dude stuck and can't get past the tutorial.
It's funny as shit because I texted you guys right away and I thought it was going to be only that part where you see it, but then it pans and you see a lot more. Like, they show it in the background.
Multiple
a lot longer
scenes.
Yeah.
Of the intro level. They went from the giant bee to riding on cars.
Yep. Hell yeah. We didn't get to see Zero though.
That's true.
The storyline itself for Spence's whole ghost, was, you know, I liked it a lot. I really did. I was laughing so hard at Kevin interrupting constantly about the football name.
Yeah, I actually the commissioner. Laughed
out loud. Yeah, the Orcas and the 99ers. And that was his correction.
Dude, they had to hustle the straights. So, you know, you gotta use the fake names.
I love that.
That was such a genius, cool little twist of the story. You know, him being a cyborg, he's actually manipulating the magnetic VHS tapes, and he's getting like a little bit of the future. Just so genius, because it's him trying to remember. And I thought they were an awesome couple. Fuck it, dude. Cyborg. Yeah. I'll take it as cyborg. He was nice as hell.
Yeah, right.
Love that. But yeah, very sweet. That's our, I guess, no, it's not our last true one, because obviously they finished next episode, but now we've got the climax of this episode being Shasta coming in absolutely hot, like a bat out of hell, being like, take me now. They rip down as soon as she points to the middle, and Alanka's like, should I go in the middle point? And she's like, no. Yeah. I was like, this is brutal. And then there is a staircase in the basement. Stanton comes flying down and saves the day. And Alanka was more pissed that she let Julia Jane go instead of saving the women. I was like, girl, Alanka's just like on
dude,
one.
Worst Alanka episode ever. Like, I still can't get over it.
Terrible Alanka episode.
I mean, don't ever drink the tea, basically. That is the moral of every story. Don't drink the tea, especially when someone's like, do it.
Yeah, hurry
don't
up.
Don't fucking do that.
Drink up.
It wasn't
a good look for Alanka.
All right, so let's get down to business about what we think was happening during this ritual. What do you think, like you guys were saying, you guys might think that Shasta, aka Julia Jane, is actually still sick and she's trying to get rid of it. The first thing I thought of was Regina, when she did the ritual, caught something, was stuck with it, almost cursed with it. She tricks Julia Jane into thinking, oh, I'm going to cure you. Actually gives Julia whatever the curse is. Julia Jane, aka Shasta, has this curse, and she's trying to pass it off on to Alanka.
Well,
interesting theory.
So
I don't know, because Alanka was about to just die by the poison right there if she drank it.
Well, here's where I'm going here. Point. And I mean, it's funny that you're saying that, because with Kevin's story, it's kind of like similar, where the demon or whatever is coming out into the next person. Honestly, where I'm going with this is I think the cult's bullshit, and I think the entire cult story is bullshit. I think that Julia actually was, you know, exactly like Sandra, where we pretty much have proof that Sandra was cured before they did the ritual.
100%.
So I'm just saying that I think that we're going to have just a cult. An actual cult that's bullshit, where Julia was an accident, quote unquote, meaning they did the ritual and she just got cured you know, with remission. And then Sandra, like, right? Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, but then we have Sandra doing the same thing. Now, it doesn't take the spookiness out of the show because the spookiness still has to deal with the old man, and the old lady. But I just think that it just seems like the story that he's telling is it's bullshit.
So what are the odds that she's cured, Julia? What are the odds after the week with Regina? What the fuck are the odds? Yeah, you know what I mean?
No. What were you going to say? We have to focus on the idea that Anya went through this ritual as the center person and saw the shadow piece and died. It's like all of that has to come into play here because I don't know. Is she just like crazy and she's seeing a shadow monster coincidentally? Because like that's part of it. And then what were they going to do in that ritual that Shasta told Alanka about and the kids did it all? And like what happened? Because whatever happened there, Shasta wanted to recreate it for herself because she's putting the blood on her head like she's Anya. So that's the part that's making me I'm not really understanding.
The problem here is that at first I was going, wow, that's very like, I don't know if funny is the right word, but like convenient in a way where ironic, I guess is the word I want, where it's like Sandra, the one who doesn't believe in the cult shit and is only there out of the kindness of her heart for Anya, is accidentally the one who gets cured by the ritual and Anya doesn't. Like, I thought that was where they were going until they said, well, actually, her tests were 3 weeks ago or whatever it was, you know, and then Alanka tells this to Shasta and says, it didn't work. Like, we put it on Anya and now we found out that Sandra is cured. You know, you would think that Julia/Shasta would be like, oh, shit. Like, I mean, she's doing the blood to herself and she's hoping, like, what if it cured Alanka and not her? Like, I just think this whole thing is just confusing.
I'm on the train with you, Jimmy, and I'm not necessarily saying I would like it, but I wouldn't be surprised if all this ritual just did nothing. It was just pure coincidence that Julia Jane was misdiagnosed. What I was saying, the ritual might be bullshit.
So, Luke, what you're saying here is when Anya is about to OD, she sees death or the shadow. Well, right after the ritual, she pretty much goes into the coma and is going to die and dies anyway. So maybe it's just, again, she's seeing death.
Yeah.
So it's very convenient that that's the timing of it where they're doing this ritual for her and she's like, holy shit, what's happening to me?
But she's actually dying.
She's just dying.
Okay. So then next question would be, is it just a total coincidence that Anya was able to come back from the other side and fix the ballerina and that had nothing to do with the ritual? Because I feel like whatever the ritual allowed her to do that.
She was on the other side. She passed on, and then she was able to give a sign. I think the ritual was just bad timing.
Okay, unrelated.
Right, unambiguous. She's the bitch, just like she said. She fixed that fucking
link. The cult needs to be in the story because the cult is what makes the Midnight Club a thing.
My last comment on this is, while Shasta's doing this whole thing, Alanka is like, what about the sacrifices? What about the personal sacrifices? So they seem to be two completely different rituals. I don't know exactly what they were aiming for Shasta's, but like, it just seems like something doesn't add up, that they're like, they're doing the different processes and they're not going to have the same outcome. So if somebody did get accidentally healed in the first one, somebody's not going to get accidentally healed in the second one.
I think there's a reason why they said Sandra's thing was 3 weeks or 2 weeks or whatever it was, weeks before the tests were.
All right, let's move forward. So just saying, young Julia Jane is giving Sadie Sink, like she just is.
Yeah.
And I it's the red hair maybe, but even something in the face, I was like, that is Max. Anyway, so Stanton has this conversation with Alanka. She's kind of like, you're so annoying to Alanka. Like, why do you trust this bitch in the woods and not me? I'm totally on Stanton's side here, you know? And Alanka ends up being like, I want to go home. She's like, don't tell anybody. Stanton's like, fuck, I'm not telling anybody. You're annoying. I'm telling everybody. So Alanka says she wants to go home. Now, the next few scenes are like a couple quick scenes. We see a lot of people. So Natsuki and Amesh. You're seeing that Amesh's motor skills are failing. His eye, which is obviously something with his sickness, when your eyesight starts to go, it's getting worse, right? So that's when Sandra's doing her goodbyes and it's very sweet, very emotional, hugs Amesh and is like, I'll see you again. And that his like little like pause, hesitation is so devastating. Like, that's not a given that I'll see you again. And that makes me so fucking sad.
Right, right.
I might hear you again, but I might not see you again.
Right.
Anya's story, when we get the Anya episode, and it's just her in a coma and her being healed in the future. She goes in therapy. She goes on and says, like, everybody died. This person died. This person died. Amesh.
Yeah.
The way he went was the worst of them all. And I know it's, you know, it's not true. It was just like,
I'm just fabricating.
But I really hope it's not foreshadowing, because it looks like Amesh is going to have a really, really tough, you know, end of the line. And I was like this close to crying on this scene with Natsuki and Amesh just talking it out, because they're like, fuck, man, it's happening.
Yeah, if they figure out this ritual healing shit, he should be first in line.
Yeah, right.
To go in the
middle. I can't believe they haven't shown him playing the PlayStation one time, man. He deserves.
I know.
What game would he be playing?
Picture
Mega
banging,
Man X.
Would you rather be playing video games?
That wouldn't have come out yet.
Whatever. Shut up.
Well, Crash Bandicoot probably, or like, I don't know. That's actually interesting.
Tony Hawk.
I'm trying to remember the original PlayStation games. The Twisted Metal might have been one of them.
Grinch, That's Still Christmas. Had that one.
Okay. So next scene is Rhett coming in, which I think is, this Rhett scene made me feel like it's the scene that made Ilanka want to stay, because she was out, right? Like, the next scene is her at the preenie, but the Rhett scene is really cute. I liked that we got to see him kind of close that storyline out. RIP Anya, the best. The leg is fixed. And we've already talked about this, but I took it as Anya just got across, right? She said, what can I do? She's looking at all the options, what she could do as a ghost. And that's like one of the things she could do. And she knew Ilanka would notice that, because they had a conversation about it. It was part of Anya's story when she told that she threw the ballerina and it broke the leg, the same leg type deal. So I thought that was cute. I was glad they did it. And I was glad that Ilanka wrote the obituary that made Rhett go, wow, whoever wrote this really knew her. I was like, a friendship. Yeah.
Really good. Really good. Yeah. And the statue was pretty genius, because, you know, Anya was saying, I'm going to do it in a clear and obvious way. And when you got Sandra talking on the intercom and Spence kind of like looking at that, you know, that's not clear and obvious. This seems pretty fucking clear.
Mm-hmm. It also makes me think, like, in the afterlife, wherever Anya is, like, She's healed. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it
translates to her being
right.
I'm whole again.
Better, yes. Which
I do appreciate the fact that they have these stories so that you could bring Ruth Codd as the actress back. And you know, Anya's actress, she can be other characters and still be in the show, even though her character passed away.
I totally agree, Jamie. Okay, so the pre-need scene, we don't really have to go into it, but I loved it. The epitaph they did was so fucking cute.
Niagara Falls. 25 seconds of sobbing from me. I was like, you're really good, Paul. You held it together for 9.5 episodes. And then they got to this. And just seeing Tim having to fucking take that, like her foster dad, just hearing the words, I want you to read this at my funeral, and him just sobbing. I was like, oh my God.
First time she calls him dad. Yeah. Like, awesome.
Really?
And also, the music here really stuck out to me. I was this is Flanagan. Yeah.
Shout out to our homies, the Newton brothers. Yeah.
Yeah. So Paul's when all that's left of me is love, give me a ring.
Oh my God.
It was good. It was a good scene, man. Got me.
I'm not crying.
That's
You're
a
crying.
First. That's got to be a first for
first
the pod.
First time crying on the pod. I think, I feel like Kyle might have got close once talking about something. I can't remember what it was, though.
So Kevin breaks up with Catherine. Thoughts? Anything?
Well, Luke said he didn't like it. Yeah, I mean,
he could have just used the better cliche way of doing it. He just didn't even like say anything. Yeah, like this is going to be. There's so much more that was left unsaid.
This is on him, and I'm assuming that they had off screen more of a conversation, but she assumed right. But like, he's just like, we need to talk, and that could be like, hey, I'm about to die tomorrow. It could be anything, right? So he's like, we need to talk. And she's like, oh, okay, what? And he, like you said, he didn't say anything. He says like one word. It's just whatever, you know?
Clean break. You don't have to watch me deteriorate more. Like, this is good for both of us. That's what you say. Everybody's good. She's receptive. She's cool. Boom. I'm happy. And then you go and hook up with Ilanka. Like, just go fuck yourself.
Yeah, that's how I felt. Catherine's literally here, like standing by him, trying, like Alanka rips into her saying, like, you're trying to parade him around, like, and you don't think about his pain. And I'm thinking, Catherine's just trying to like do nice things. She's trying to live a normal life. She's trying to live a normal life and have a picnic on a beach. She's not trying to like force Kevin
and,
to do what
and
she wants. So I'm like, Alanka, fuck off.
Yeah, he said Alanka was out of line, but she wasn't wrong. And
I see both ways. And
no,
I think
that's what I said. It's two sides of the coin.
The darkness of like, it sucks to be the person dating someone who's dying, and it sucks to be the one who's fucking dying. There is literally no solve for it. It blows. And that is a good portrayal of it. And it is what it is. But honestly, it's harder to be the one that is still alive.
At least Kev was like, you didn't do anything. You were fine.
Yeah, I thought like, he was okay during
it's
this.
Not you,
I feel
it's
like,
me.
Yeah,
pretty much.
It gets ruined by the kiss later. That's
it's not you. It's Alanka.
Trying. I hate it. I hate that kiss. I hate them as a couple. I'll be honest.
It's just.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just tough. It's just tough because, you give him a girlfriend because you want to have that kind of tension, and then you want to have that scene for story purposes. But really, just if you want them to be together, don't give him a girlfriend, and we don't have to talk about it.
You know what it is? It's just the old man, the old woman, and the two of them trying to kiss again. Like they're both possessing these two bodies and trying to smooch.
I buy that actually, Paul. Okay. So last Midnight Club, right, is our last one. If we don't get a season two, this is our very last one. So Kevin finally finishes his story, which he tells Spence before, like, I don't finish my stories, right? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, we can open the floor for anyone who wants to talk about it, but basically, like, the whole theme is the same thing. He wants to not hurt anybody. Like, he'd rather be the one suffering than have everyone else be hurt. Like, what did you guys get from it?
Well, you don't care about Spence's mom coming finally and giving him a hug? Fuck. My gosh.
Wait. Where is that?
If we're talking about...
That was all right, but
yeah, if we're talking about the breakup, then we're talking about... We got to talk about...
Oh, shit. Spence. I skipped that whole thing. Yeah. Charisse's fiance. Don't do
that. Yeah, that was good. I like that.
That was
but,
so funny.
But no, I mean, how awesome. Yeah. Spence's mom coming. Loved it.
Oh, that was good.
The Mark smirk was amazing.
Yes.
Yes. Another point for QB1.
And this is the family visitation. All right. So we got Amesh learning that his parents will hopefully make it back. And we also got Natsuki and her mom, you know, now meeting Amesh. And it was just really cute. And it's funny because, Kathleen, you said that Rhett was the reason that Alanka decided to stay. And I probably agree with you. You know, seeing that sign, that's probably the reason she wanted to stay. But I was seeing this when Alanka walked in and she saw everybody actually happy with their families. And I was like, all right, maybe this is why she wants to stay. You know, she realized it is a good place. But either way, it's good to see everybody happy for once.
I also love how Natsuki's mom was speaking another language, saying, you know, the embarrassing stuff. She's like, "Mom," and it's like, they don't know what you're saying.
Yeah, but they're teenagers. It's good stuff.
Yeah, no, I'm kidding.
All right, so back to Kev's story. What do you guys think?
Let me just say that I've been waiting for the end of Dusty's stories forever, and I was me and Kathleen's solo episode was the one where Anya, the episode called Anya, where she's in the coma and she sees all these visions, and I was really worried that the last closure we were going to get on Dusty's story was that like quick, just him just hammering Sheila. But thankfully we got this whole thing, and I'm happy that they also even cleared up the whole idea of how the killer was there for decades. It was like this whole possession monster, but overall, you know, they did rush it in the end because it didn't get a full length of all the other stories. But if you add it to the time of the other one, it was good. I really liked Kevin's storytelling.
The way he was able to like almost swing, but like swings into himself, you know, pretty cool way to go out. The only thing is, what was special about, I forget Alanka's character, Sheila. What was special about Sheila that, you know, the 12 other girls in front of her.
Well, he actually loved Sheila.
He loved her. Yeah.
The other ones were just chicks or dudes or, you know.
All right. I never picked up on that. I thought he was just like manipulating her and stuff like that. I didn't know he actually, Dusty had feelings for
He was normal until he was given his orders, basically.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. So that was where it kind of threw me off, because remember when the story first started, I was like, he's Dexter, because I took it like he was manipulating her, and I took it like he was just a psychopath. But then, you know, this shows that it was the possession or however you want to say it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And then Alanka takes over and she finishes the witch, which I was less interested in, if I'm honest.
Totally, totally yeah. agree. I was just going to say on my, since I'm hating on Alanka this entire episode, Alanka literally makes the worst choices and the hardest to root for in episode 9, 10, and has the worst ghost story.
So I was like, liked what are you everyone finishing it. Though,
yeah, I thought that was great.
Cool. To help her.
That she couldn't do it, yeah.
So I already kind of gave all of the ghost stories a pass in terms of like plot, because they're just mini arcs written by characters in story. They don't have to make sense, but I just hate it. The whole idea how they're the witches, like the mom and the daughter, their powers were healing and scrying. And if you heal anybody, you just die.
Yeah.
And then,
right. Like, well, you and take the scrying their wound thing, pretty much. Like,
whatever. What was the scrying thing during the day that didn't help? It's the same thing as night. You just fuck with it. The universe snaps back. It didn't land. This was one of the worst stories of the show, I would say. But it does get really, really good when the team comes together to assist and give the alley-oops to finish it. And they're all putting in their own piece. We see Luke and Becky show up again.
Yeah. And Luke and Becky were there.
Adding the alternate dimension.
She's
dead.
Nah, so good. She died. It was a whole thing.
Yeah.
We got Anya's mug. You got Anya's donut mug back in there. That was cool.
In defense of the witch story, the only thing that I could think of in my head about day versus night was day is the future in general and night is your future. So that's why it screws with you, because it, you know, like it had to do with something that
you thought that out way more than Alanka did. Alanka was not over that.
but also I agree. I really liked all the kids finishing the story for her. Great acting by Alanka's actress, you know, after when she couldn't finish. Going back to what I was saying about, you know, you could have done this season and made it one season and not had the supernatural part of the husband and wife ghosts or whatever they are, the old man and the old woman. This would have been a good ending for me. Now it's time to shit on it almost, because I don't know about shit on it, but, you know, we took while I'm watching this, even knowing that there's hopefully two seasons, I'm still going, well, I liked these stories, but you just spent 25 minutes out of our hour that we have with these people in the last episode, giving us these stories that are not really fully plot.
I think that they work, right? I didn't love Witch, but it is her personality, right? She wants to heal people. She'll do anything to help people, right? And I mean, I think I loved the stories. I thought they were like a great insight into the people.
Even I agree.
Embellished. Obviously, Dusty's not going, or Kevin's not going around killing people. But like, I thought Amesha's story was worth all the stories, you know, like so they were so good. I don't mind it. I don't mind the stories. That's the whole point.
I honestly
think the stories were A+ all the time. And the rest kind of maybe.
Let me reiterate what I mean. I'm saying that for the last episode, the stories taking up that much time is what bothered me.
Okay,
I love
good,
the stories.
Because I was going to have a problem if you didn't say that.
No, the point of the stories is to learn about the characters.
Mm-hmm.
By the end, now again, we didn't realize that there's a lot of people that don't know there's going to be a season two. There's a lot of people that are probably very pissed off right now until they look it up, like Kathleen. Mm-hmm. So the story's purposes are, first of all, they're entertaining, but second of all, it's to learn about the character. Well, by the finale, we shouldn't be learning about the characters anymore. We should be finishing it up. Now, again, there's a second season, so it continues, and it's almost like saying this is the middle of the story. But for a lot of people right now, they're going, holy shit, we just had this finale thinking it's Hill House, Bly, Midnight Mass, whatever, and 25, 30 minutes of it was learning more about the characters instead of, you know, where's the old man, the old woman, and that kind of stuff.
I totally agree.
Yeah.
Well, just it puts a bad taste in my mouth because I'm waiting for, you know, Mike Flanagan, big wrap up finale reveals, finally get revealed. And all I can think about is we're getting like a cute little story about, and Alanka's not even, you know, telling it anymore. It doesn't necessarily mean anything. It's cute how everybody finishes and, you know, gives how they feel about each other. And they feel like a big family, but I'm like, you know, I would just be so frustrated waiting for a big reveal and then almost getting virtually nothing.
Whenever I'm like talking about Flanagan shows, I usually break it up into two parts, like the whole journey and then the ending, where Hill House was perfection front to back. I personally am in the mindset where I thought the ending of Bly was amazing, but the ride was a little eh. And then I thought the ride for Midnight Mass was amazing, but the ending was bad. And now for this one, I'm very similar with Midnight Mass, to the point where I loved the story so much. One of you just said A plus, like they are, I love them so freaking much that I think that this is already, this would probably be my second favorite of the Flanagan shows. I'm sorry about the Bly shot there, Kathleen, it's but okay. I also love the ending of
you
Bly.
You saying
so
the
much.
End. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And once we get the second season, I'm sure that like my whole opinion is going to change the entire thing. But as of right now, where we are, like I loved the stories so freaking much. I was never so excited to take notes on just random episodes of one-off little things, just because I knew like you didn't have to pay that much attention. You just sit back, enjoy, learn about your characters, their psyche, and how it like plays into the bigger themes. And it was just so good for me that I'm just extra disappointed with this ending getting nothing.
To build on that.
Right. And that's what I was trying to say. And you kind of just did a lot better.
The the interjections of everybody else at the table while the storytelling is going on, they give such a good comedic relief. Yeah. Like Kevin ripping about the sports team as you know Spence is going through, it just adds so much more to it. So the stories were so fun. And yeah, I don't even know if there's going to be season two. Are they going to continue doing this? Like we finally, it seems like we got a story from everybody. We're going to have new characters or whatever. It's going to be really interesting.
Well, we got to finish this last scene, right?
So yeah, let's just finish
but let me just say, this is not important, but I did like how they brought Sandra into the final story as well, too. Like that, well, her character, her actor was shown. And it's so funny. I don't know if you guys noticed, but lately, I guess since their fight, maybe, Spence always winks at her. And Spence's character in the story even winked at her, even though it isn't really those two. It's not the two of them. And I was like, oh, that's funny.
That's cute. I like that. So, I like that their like come up friendship was a really good story. I liked that.
Yeah.
And their goodbye was really sweet as well. So really quick, Alonka tells the crew about the leg, which is obviously dope. Then we move on to Kevin Alonka. Alonka's basically like, I didn't like the ending. Like dying is a really shitty reason not to live, etc. We already kind of touched on how everyone feels about that. And then the final scene. So we get Stanton. She's going in. We pan. I didn't even bother reading anything on the clipping. If anyone has,
because you saw the old man and old lady.
I was just like, that's good enough for me. And we knew
they just bought the real
it's
estate.
Just saying there they bought. I was, the, yeah, right.
Yeah, there wasn't anything there.
And then she sits down in front of the fire. You see the paragon on her neck, and the bald head. She takes her wig off. So I thought, Jimmy, I really was like confirmed. Athena.
That's Athena.
Me too.
So okay. I don't need to get into it too much. I kind of started saying it earlier. I screwed up because I was thinking that Regina, when we saw her, I forgot it was in the past. So Regina at this point could be very, very old or dead, and Stanton would just be her daughter 30 years later. That's fine. And it's funny how that works, because I just took it as like, oh, they have a cliffhanger ending where Stanton's actually bad and she's part of the Paragon too. And maybe there's just some kind of power trip fight between her and Julia. And that's the story for now. But that's okay. So, yeah, and I'm on your side 100% now. There's no doubt in my mind that that's Athena.
I would have been in almost saying that 100% confirmed if they didn't show that last scene as her being Athena. But I don't know if that's just me or you needed that. As like explicit confirmation, just from the context clues. I thought we needed that. Okay.
I like the alopecia aspect from it too, Kathleen. I didn't even think about that. I thought, you know, cancer, chemo, she's losing her hair, but it doesn't really make sense because we don't see her being sick. So I'm all about that. I mean, it's just almost more evidence to the fact.
Mm-hmm. All right.
We're here. Where does the story go? We know that there's supposed to be a season two. Where does the story go? Because we have cliffhanger with Anya's statue. We have the old man, the old lady is a huge cliffhanger. We have Julia got away, and we have Stan's Athena. So Like, what story do you want to tell here? Like, we're going back to, like, if Nazi's correct and it's just the old man, the old lady are feeding off the years they have left. Is that the story we're telling? Like, is Julia going to try to break back in? Like, Stan not being bad is kind of a wrench to me because that's just proof she's good. Like, there's nothing really to that. Like, oh, yeah, you're Athena. So, yeah, you're great that you're Athena, but you're not bad. So you don't have anything specific to do except protect the house.
I think you're basically the way you're phrasing these questions is summing up my thoughts on the idea that if there is going to be a season two, they should have leaned into it more because they, right. them kind of making it a soft ending where it can stand alone. It, first of all, it's not satisfying for the season one watch. And two, it's like you're saying, people probably don't even know that there's going to be a second season. There wasn't right. enough open-ended. There's not enough good questions out there. There's still stuff there for us to work with. Like Shasta escaped. We got to deal with Julia. We got to deal with her. And then Alanka getting healed and whatever, you know, there's a couple of things, but they should have leaned into it more, had more obvious questions we need answering and have more just obvious twists left on the table where now we can't even really guess. It would just be total
yeah.
random dart throws.
What's the substance? That's my question. What substance is there? Like, what Shasta. Can they tell me for a season about the old man, the old lady now?
I mean, I think it's old man, old lady, where Athena's been all this time. Like, what was her journey with this? Then we've got the kids. We've got new kids coming in as well. That's where it would
the
be.
The ritual... I mean, has supernatural yeah. things like the shadow monster, whatever Anya saw and whatever that is in the house is on the table still. But that's pretty much the end of my list I have written down.
Right.
Shasta was just my big thing. She got away. She's obviously trying to do something. The ritual she didn't complete, obviously, because Alanka didn't do it. So what's the deal with her and her whole fucking farm shit? Herbs,
healing vile. Vortex not answered.
Yeah
it's just
but again
where the energy comes
bullshit?
From
are she a crazy biatch? Like do we lean really into the healing vortex thing enough? Like I was wondering if the water was going to be curing someone if they drink it, or I mean honestly at this point nothing, everything could be knocked away as not supernatural except the old man, the old lady, and if we want to say the death thing.
Yeah.
Everything else could be bullshit.
I'll be honest. Right. I love the season, love the show, but I kind of have a bad taste in my mouth because of this finale. It's weird.
It's Midnight Mass again, man. This is exactly how I felt after Midnight Mass. I don't regret it. I love the ride, and it was a good show. I would still say that this was a really good show. It's just yep. the satisfying piece is what you're left thinking about, and this is kind of where we're at. But it was a Flanagan story, high quality, high yeah. production value. I was happy to watch it. I'll watch every fucking show he ever makes ever. So yep. like I'm ready for it. And if he does come out with a season two, I'm fucking first in line
him.
To podcast on it. Yeah.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I trust him 100% if he has a season two in his head. And he obviously has to have something in his head because I don't believe he would have ended it this way.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
it was based on a book too. So there's probably
yeah,
like things.
Right.
Let's
you got the
do...
tree, right? The initials in the tree.
Yeah, I mean, that's
yeah.
Gina
be.
Ballard, baby. That's,
yeah, gotta
that's
be.
Still,
definitely Gina
I think
Ballard.
That's still, yeah, that holds up.
No, that is canon.
Yeah.
That is
Yeah. That
canon.
Is what it is. Yeah.
Totally that was a great
thank,
call.
Yeah.
By Luke.
I wasn't
let's
on the
do
podcast.
Around,
I'm proud of you.
No, you weren't. Yeah. Let's do a round table about everybody's, like, after season one finish, everybody's favorite character at the end, and then also everybody's favorite ghost story. And like I thought about mine, so I can start here.
Yeah,
because my
same.
Initial answer, because we did the initial take after the first two episodes, and we talked about like who we went around, did the same exact thing, except for the character wise. And I was Kevin right off the bat. We acknowledged he was sketchy, but at this point, at the end, I actually surprised myself. But I think Spence turned into my favorite character.
That's good.
And it might be recency biased. Because of how great episode 9 was and it shined over episode 10, but also like after he opened up and it started happening around episode 3 or 4 and he was like cool with Mark, he was cool with me. And then it was, he was just like likable. And I don't know. He just really did it for me in the back half of the season. And he became my favorite. And then favorite short story is Natsuki's with Henry Thomas.
Wow.
I thought it was, yeah, yeah. I know you're going to say Amesh's because that's definitely 1A, 1B. But I think I ended on Natsuki's because, I don't know, I like the trippiness of it being like a metaphor for her almost suicide death in the garage. And Henry Thomas was crazy. And I was trying to get that had me on the edge of my seat trying to guess. And like them passing the hitchhiker that turned out to be Natsuki. All of it was so freaking well done. And that one was actually scary because you didn't know if she was going to die or not. So that turned into my favorite short story.
I'm going to piggyback off that. And that's actually my favorite short story too. It was so good. It just phenomenal figuring out. You're like, what the fuck is this? The first 5 minutes. And then you slowly get pieces together. The tennis ball hitting the windshield was brilliant. Because it was just very, very well told short story.
I thought it was an apple. I didn't even realize it was a tennis ball. I was like, what the fuck is that green thing in the fucking thing?
And then my favorite character, I think, has got to be Mesh, man. He's just, he's so good. He's so funny. He always seems like he's lighthearted. And he seems like he's almost, you know, they're all struggling, but he seems like he's like starting to really, really struggle now, especially on the decline. He's so funny. I love that he's a gamer and I love the story. So a mess, just a A plus guy.
Jimmy?
I'll jump in and say, I'm going to let you talk about the story, Kathleen, because I think Amesh's story was the best, but I also agree with you, Luke and Paul, that I really, really did love Natsuki's story. And you guys
pick a lane, bro. You can't play all these sides.
You did 1A, 1B, and so, and I'm not even going to get, I'm just going 1A, 1B here, but no, but I went to Mesh number one then. So, but I just wanted to say, you know, that's my runner up because I did enjoy it as well. My two favorite, if I can't say Mark, cause he's not really a main character.
You can say Mark.
Well, yeah, I like Mark a lot, but I'm going Spence as well, Luke. I mean, I think you nailed it. I honestly do think that going through, I thought he had the best character progression storyline wise. I think that, like you said, he opened up, but then I just love how, you know, he had something that he had to come to terms with. We saw everybody around him, you know, showing their love for him. We got to see the scenes with Mark. We got to see the scenes where, you know, like Kathleen said, it's a shame, but he finally sees people that he can, you know, believe in something with. And, you know, again, it's a shame that he's going to die and not get to see, you know, the future. But the part where he speaks to his mom actually showing up, like just the progression of his story just did it for me big. So I'm going with Spence.
Anya and Spence had the best character work on this show, in my opinion.
And speaking of that, Anya is my favorite character. I think Anya was mine from the start. I'm going to keep it with her till the end. I think she really held it down for 7 straight episodes. And even her little guest spots on the side stories were fucking fire. So I'll give it to Anya, RIP. And I also will say Amesha's story was my favorite. And Luke put it in the best way, saying it was such a Black Mirror episode. And I think after he tells it, someone says, I think Kevin says, like, call Spielberg or something like that. And I'm like, yeah, that was the most fully fleshed out. It made the most sense. There was no like plot holes. It was good. Raul Coley was in it. I thought it was the most easy to rewatch as well. When I was rewatching, sometimes on the other ones during my second rewatch, I'd skip through the story just to make the rewatch faster, because watching 4 hours before a pod is a lot to do. I would skip through, but I did not skip through Amesha's story. So I'll give it to Anya and Amesha's story. Amesh is a close second. I even would like to say that Shasta was a really compelling character. She's not my favorite because like she's probably like the villain, right? But she is my favorite in the sense where every time she was on the screen, I'm like, who is this bitch? She was bright girl, really. Like she was bright girl. She was like making me pumped up every time she was on until she just like her stock plummeted. But
plot mover,
good stuff by Flanagan. I think that, and everyone could just say real quick where it ranks of the four. I'm going to say third, with Midnight Mass being last.
Yeah, I'll say third. It's tied probably closer to second than, you know, tied for fourth or for me, but I'll place it right in three.
I need to rewatch a Bly Bad, but for now I'm going Hill House, Bly, Midnight Club, Midnight Mass.
Okay. And I already said mine. I have it as second because of the character work and because I love the story so much.
Hey, Luke, yours is Hill House, Midnight Club, Midnight Mass, Bly.
No, I have Midnight Mass at the bottom.
Oh, shit. That's okay. All right. Anything else we want to talk about? That was good. I loved doing that. That was a great pod for all 5 episodes. I loved it.
Yeah, I mean,
really, every Flanagan show, we have a blast.
All three of us just hot to hot. Just Flanagan's awesome. We dissect the shitting out. Dissecting the shit out of it is so fun. Disappointing sometimes when you have really good ideas and they lead nowhere. Not saying they don't lead anywhere, but not having confirmation at the end of the season stinks.
Yeah,
I think it's worth saying really, really quickly that there is a chance that there won't be a season two. You know, we've heard that Netflix didn't like the viewership numbers, and
it was number one, like Sandman. But
yeah, I mean,
ridiculous.
It is crazy, and it really puts a bad taste in your mouth if you're someone like Flanagan who's going to create this story, hoping there's a second season, and then they pull the rug out from under you. I mean, we don't even need to bring up like the OA and even Sense8 and things like that. I mean, those are old school, but you know. It's a shame, and we don't even know how good Netflix did with the promotion of Midnight Club, because I wasn't seeing it too much on Netflix. Mike Flanagan himself tweeted about the fact that it wasn't seeing it on the front page, and he was asking if other people were, and people were tweeting back at him saying they had to look for it. So if you don't give it a shot, meaning Netflix, then, you know, what do you expect? So hopefully we get a second season, because we were calling out the plot holes or calling out things we didn't like. But again, anything Mike Flanagan is better than most. So we want a season two.
A season two could literally skyrocket this, like right up next to Hill House. If they cover all the holes together and everything like that.
If they fix this, then it's two for me. Like, I don't know what's ever going to beat Hill House, but if they add to it and it works, then boom. Two by a lot to me.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, that's the episode. We are done. We have to wait a whole nother year, either for season two or Fall of the House of Usher.
Let's talk about that really quick, because you know that he's doing Fall of the House of Usher and he does one a year. So that means that we won't get Midnight Club till at least 2020.
This is unprecedented. He could have it running in parallel. You never know.
But we don't hear that it's filming yet. So it definitely won't be ready for next October.
Yeah, true. But yeah, so that was the episode. If you like what you heard, give Binge on TV a follow on Twitter and Instagram. We've covered all the Flanagan shows, cover all different kinds of shows. Go give us a look. BingeOnTV.com, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, anywhere you listen to your podcast. You can just scroll for our 300 episodes, baby. We covered this. We covered that. And we covered your favorite shows. I bet we did. So go check out currently House of the Dragon, Vampire Academy, if you're watching that on Peacock, or Rick and Morty for a fun little haunt. You know what I'm saying? We are Binchdown TV, and thanks for listening.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.